Cindy Graham shared in her call to gather the story of the stroke that Jill Bolte Taylor experienced, Dr. Jill, as she likes to be called. Dr. Jill's stroke is a story with a happy ending. This happy ending was a long time coming and was certainly in great parts the result of all the effort she put into recovering. About 8 years after her stroke, she reported feeling like she had completely recovered. Recovery. Not only did she recover from the stroke what she had lost, but she gained some amazing things in that process. She was a different person as the result of her stroke. Less angry, less weighted down by memories and baggage from the past, more at one with the whole world. She recognized the fundamental truth about life that her brain was not able to recognize before the stroke, that she, all of us, are part of this great eternal flow of the universe. We are not inherently separated and isolated people. This was the amazing stroke of insight that she had from this experience, and so she wrote the book, The Stroke of Insight. What a blessing for her to have this insight, and what a blessing that she is choosing to devote a lot of her life to sharing the insight. You can read the book, which sounds amazing. I haven't read it. Cindy has. You could also see her TED Talk and get the 15-minute synopsis, which is what I did. It's an amazing, amazing, amazing talk. During the talk, she actually has a brain in her hand that she talks about how the brain works and this whole experience for her. Dr. Jill's story makes me think of Denise. Denise's story didn't have a happy ending. Denise was the beloved wife of Bob, one of my very best friends in high school. Bob and Denise met and fell in love in their early 30s. Denise had been in a difficult marriage that didn't work out. She had two daughters from that marriage. Bob had looked hard for the right person and had not found that right person until he met Denise. In 1993, I traveled to New Hampshire and joyously officiated at their wedding. 4.5 years later, when Denise was 37, the same age as Dr. Jill when she had her stroke, a devastating stroke unexpectedly struck down Denise. She survived for several days but never regained consciousness. Bob called me as he was about to make the decision to withdraw life support. And shortly after that, I traveled back to New Hampshire to officiate at her memorial service. Denise loved life. She loved people. She was the kind of person who just drew people together around her. She was a wonderful mom and a dedicated, passionate, loving partner. And the 300 people who showed up for her memorial service were a tribute to the way that she lived her life. A few years later, fellowship member Deanne called me with the shocking and tragic news that her son Joel had dropped dead of a stroke while taking a shower that morning. Joel was 37 years old. I drove down to the Madison area to attend his memorial service and heard about Joel's life, his thriving dentistry practice, his beautiful family, and of course I knew about his devastated mom, whose husband had also died unexpectedly and tragically a few years before. Well, not surprisingly, it's a lot harder to find blessing in Denise's death and in Joel's death in their strokes than in Dr. Jill's stroke. That's why I felt compelled to share their stories today along with Dr. Jill's. This is not going to be a sentimental, happy ever after kind of sermon. That's not how things always work. I thought of that anew this week, visiting with Joe Landry in the hospital after he got his terminal diagnosis. I don't even want to try to find blessing in Denise's, in Joel's strokes, or in Joe's cancer. Life can be so harsh. And all I can do in the face of this type of tragedy is realize anew that life is short that there are no guarantees, and any day could be my last day. There is an urgency we need to feel about this gift of life. And I suppose that realizing this anew is a blessing, but if I had my choice, I'd much rather have Denise and Joel around. My mom had two major strokes, and they were somewhere between Dr. Jill's and Denise's and Joel's in terms of impact. She survived them both, and they were hard. She was in her mid-80s, not her mid-30s, so that's a big difference. Her first stroke took place a few years before she died. Her second stroke a few months before she died of congestive heart failure, which was the culprit behind the strokes. I rushed to see her after that first stroke, and it was easy to see the devastation that the stroke had caused in her brain, slurred speech, a significant deficit on one side, and diminished mental faculties. But you could almost see her brain rewiring itself as she recovered most of what she initially lost in fairly quick order. The weirdest thing was that as she rewired her brain, as that all happened, she accessed a love of baseball that she had had as a girl but lost completely as an adult. I remember how shocked my dad was to walk into the hospital room and see her watching ESPN, which I swear she had never heard of before the stroke. Man, none of us saw that coming. But from that moment on, she hardly missed another a Detroit Tigers baseball game. And while this wasn't exactly the kind of profound insight that Dr. Jill had, it still was a really great blessing. I was visiting my mom when she had her second stroke. This stroke especially impacted her ability to see. Her brain could not process anything she saw left of center. We figured out there was a problem when she's walking along, turns left, and walks into a wall that she did not see. And again, she had some slurred speech, some impaired cognitive ability, and once again, her brain seemed to rewire itself before our very eyes. I remember watching in awe as one of the therapists gave her a cognitive test, which she aced. She was quicker on the math questions than I was, like 12 by times 9. I'm trying to calculate that, and she immediately had the answer. So even though her congestive heart failure continued to kill her, she had the gift of being mentally sharp right up till the coma that she lapsed into in the last few days of her life. And I think that mental sharpness was an amazing blessing, especially coming out of the strokes. Well, today, I'm picking out stroke as one striking example of suffering. It's certainly one that has impacted my life. But, of course, stroke is just one of the nearly infinite forms suffering can take. Suffering is universal. We all experience it. Voices of suffering fill the wide sky, as one of my favorite hymns in our hymnal says. It's unfortunately true. And sometimes suffering really comes to us unfairly, where we get way more than our share of it. And some of us are really lucky and get less than our share of it. We also never know when suffering is going to strike. None of these people knew they were about to have a stroke. So here's the question I want to consider today. Can suffering, a devastating stroke for example, can suffering be redemptive? The place to begin with this question, I suppose, is what do we mean by redemptive? Redemption has a loaded and complicated theological history. When I looked it up in my dictionary, the theological definition was this, that redemption is the deliverance from sin and its consequences by means of a sacrifice offered for the sinner. Okay, this is not what I mean by redemption. I don't believe we human beings, first of all, are in need of deliverance from sins, nor do I believe that some sort of sacrifice, let's say the brutal execution of a certain Jewish prophet whose birth myth we celebrate this month, for example, I don't believe that's required. To me, redemption may not be anything more elaborate or more tricky than this, that life goes on. Yeah, sometimes not with us. But life goes on, and there is the possibility, at least, of blessing, even in the bleakest times. So maybe it's Dr. Jill and her unexpected insight that really unlocked her life. Maybe it's my mom's miraculously reconversion to being a baseball fan. Maybe it's my friend Bob picking up the pieces, caring for Denise's children, and eventually finding and falling in love with a new partner. Maybe redemption is really nothing more or less than these mostly quiet miracles. I'll grant the possibility that this kind of blessing can rise out of suffering. But what I will never do is glorify suffering. One strand of Christianity has put the glorification of suffering front and center by relentlessly focusing on Jesus' death. I think this is a bad interpretation of the Jesus story. This bad interpretation, and remember this is one strand of Christianity, but this bad interpretation is grounded in the doctrine of the atonement. The idea that Jesus' big sacrifice saves all those who believe in Jesus now and forevermore. In a sermon on the atonement a few years ago, I talked about the problems with this doctrine and concluded that, you know, really this doctrine may not be salvageable. Rebecca Parker and Rita Nakashima Brock write in their book Saving Paradise about this fixation on the crucifixion in the strand of Christianity and this fixation on how Jesus hideously died for all of our sins. They assert that this fixation first came to the forefront in Saxony shortly after Charlemagne brutally conquered it in the 10th century. With this shift, suffering and violence became the vehicles of redemption. I think that suffering and violence are never redemptive. In the story of his death, Jesus was not sacrificed by God. He was executed by a corrupt and violent empire. And even though, if you look hard, you can find blessings in that story, there was nothing redemptive about his execution. Another problem with this strand of Christianity is that it can make us view suffering as a way for people who are oppressed to have a better life next time. So it really can become a tool of oppression. Going back again to our nation's original sin, which is slavery, some white preachers lifted up the glory of the slaves suffering as a pathway to paradise for them. The message was, it's okay, we're doing all this to you because the greater your suffering, the more likely you are to have a great life next time around. So they sought to make being on the receiving end of massive and horrific oppression, like being held captive your whole life, like having your family ripped apart, like being victimized by crimes like rape that never were ever going to result in punishment for the perpetrator. They sought to make these things the pathway to redemption and salvation. I say beware of anyone who glorifies suffering, especially suffering of other people, not themselves. So seeing suffering as redemptive is a slippery slope. Too many folks have slid way too far down that slope. I don't want to slide down that slope. I don't want to glorify suffering ever. Suffering is bad. And it is also true that blessings can flow from suffering. Both these things are true. So if by redemption we mean that some good, some blessing can come out of the ashes of our suffering, then I'll agree to the possibility of suffering being redemptive. But that is as far as I'll go. So how do we deal with suffering in our lives? One of the tricks of getting through suffering, I think, is to keep our eyes wide open, to see the blessings that might be accompanying the suffering. My colleague, the Reverend Scott Taylor, suggests this in the journey packet that we passed out this month to the journey group participants. This month's theme is blessing. And Scott suggests that in the face of suffering, we need to seek to widen our viewpoint. One meaning of the Hebrew word for salvation, which I think is related to redemption, is to make wide. So we need to make wider our viewpoint. Of course, this is way easier said than done. Being mired in suffering, that's one of the hardest times to widen our viewpoint. Tunnel vision goes along with great suffering, where the only thing we see is what's in front of us, that suffering, and everything else seems to fall away. The more intense the suffering, the more that tunnel vision comes to be. So suffering can be the hardest time to step back and take a wider picture, wider view. It can be the hardest time to look and find blessing. But being able to do this, at least a little bit, is how we can, I think, find some redemption in suffering. Widening her viewpoint is exactly what Dr. Jill did in the wake of her stroke. Widening her viewpoint to include baseball is part of what my mom did. So, I think the best way to prepare ourselves to be able to widen our viewpoint when things get tough is to practice looking for blessing every single day. I said this before and I'll say it again, that part of the point of spiritual practice is to learn skills that will help us when times get tough. Practice may not make perfect, but it sure does help. So spiritual practice can help us practice and prepare for those challenging times in our life. So let's take the example, the spiritual practice of being mindful about what we're grateful for each day. My family does this at dinner. We go around and say what we're thankful for. Some people do this at bedtime, just before they fall asleep. They think back to their day and they try to find at least one thing they're grateful for. Others incorporate this practice into a spiritual practice like meditation or prayer. Maybe some of you, when we ring the gong, take that as an opportunity to do a gratitude inventory. Well, the more we learn about the brain, the more we are discovering just how plastic it is. That's what I saw when my mom's brain rewired itself in the wake of her strokes. And practicing something over and over again can literally change our brain. So through daily practice, we can rewire our brain to be able to recognize and name blessing in our lives. And then that skill can help us not narrow our vision into tunnel vision. So, I suggest that each one of us chooses to look for blessing. And we choose to do this on a daily basis. If you don't already do a gratitude inventory, I suggest you start one today. If you have one, but you're a little sporadic in doing it, like me, I suggest you get more consistent, because you actually might need this tomorrow. Another way to widen our viewpoint is to be part of a community like this one. Scott Taylor suggests that the trick then is not only to keep our eyes wide open, but to have friends who never let us close our eyes completely. And then there comes a second choice that we can also practice, and that is choosing to become a source of blessing for others and for the world. As Rebecca Parker says in today's reading, this choice comes partly out of the recognition that in the midst of this broken world, there still is unspeakable beauty, grace, and mystery. So widening our view and looking for blessing are necessary ingredients, and then choosing to be a source of blessing. And the choice to be a blessing is what draws us into the work of social justice. It draws us into community. It draws us into life. Like choosing to look for and see blessing, the choice to become a source of blessing takes practice. So regularly practicing at things like choosing to create justice, like choosing to create community, practicing those things, that's a way to help ourselves develop the skill of being blessings for others. And even in the worst times, we may be still able to do that if we practice. in this season of cold and diminishing daylight, human beings have created celebrations like the winter solstice, Hanukkah, Advent, Christmas, and Kwanzaa to help us see our blessings and to help us be a blessing to others. We especially need to remember and practice these things about blessing at this time of year. So this is the point of these holidays. It's the point of visiting loved ones. It's the point of giving gifts. It's the point of helping those who are struggling. And it's the point of celebrating the dark and the promise of light returning in song and in dance and in story. So there's the story about this baby born to poor unwed parents, born in a stable in the backwaters of a vast and brutal empire. That story mimics this widening of the viewpoint. It does this because that stable is not a place you're going to look, you know, naturally for great blessing, right? Great blessing out of all the places on this earth comes from the stable? These poor people? That's widening the view to say that blessing comes from unexpected places. So this holiday season, widen your viewpoint. Pay attention. And then open your heart. Act for justice. Practice all this. These are what these celebrations of the solstice and Hanukkah and Advent and Christmas and Kwanzaa are all about. Count your blessings. Be a blessing.